This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
The annual report for the Medical Bureau of Road Safety reveals that there was a driver arrested 6 times last year on suspicion of driving while intoxicated. Guess the age of the youngest male driver arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence. 14. And when it comes to a female, it was 16. And of course, you're not supposed to be driving a car until you're at least 17. The oldest man arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence was 95. Now, in a moment, we'll talk to Sheila Gulheeny, the Chief Executive of Alcohol Action Ireland. But Geraldine Herbert, as motoring editor of the Sunday Independent and Irish Independent, what do you make of these revelations?
Yeah, I mean, they're really worrying figures, considering we know that alcohol is a contributory factor in about 30% of fatalities on Irish roads. I think there was a number of things that jumped out at me. 78% were aged under 45 of those who were detected. I mean, that's an age group that you would have thought a generation who've grown up knowing the dangers of drink driving. The other thing was that many of the drivers were several times over the legal limit. So this is not a case of one for the road. This is, you know, people are making a deliberate choice to drink or take drugs and drive. And I think just that message is not getting through about drink driving. I think also because there was a lot of repeat offenders, there's a need for some sort of rehabilitation and treatment programs. And Professor Dennis Cusack of the Medical Bureau has also raised the issue about alcohol locks in cars for repeat offenders. So I think we need to do something. The message is not getting through and we need to take a lot more proactive action.
Do you have the figures for people who are arrested more than once?
I had them 2 seconds ago and now I've moved them, but there was a number of repeat offenders. Let me just see if I can. It was enough that it struck me that there's something that we need to look at.
Okay, I've just located them. 12 drivers were arrested 4 times last year, 28 drivers arrested 3 times, and 237 drivers were arrested twice. Whatever about the people arrested twice? Does it not strike you as odd that somebody could be in a position whereby it takes so long to process maybe a particular prosecution that you could be arrested 3 times in a year or even 4 times?
Well, I mean, even the twice, Matt, if you consider how rare it is for people to be detected in the first place, how many times have you done that before you were caught? So there's definitely an issue of people not being put off the road when they're supposed to be, of taking too long to deal with these cases. But also the repeat offenders is the thing. I mean, people like that obviously have a serious alcohol issue, and simply banning them or, you know, finding them or putting the whatever, it's not dealing with it. That's where the rehabilitation and treatment programs, and that's also where the alcohol lock idea comes in. You simply can't drive your car if you're over the limit. And that's why Professor Cusack has been very adamant about the introduction of this and the benefit it could actually bring.
Okay, Sheila Gulheeny is here, Chief Executive of Alcohol Action Ireland. I think you're having a seminar on this particular topic tomorrow. Can you give us a little bit more detail about what Geraldine Nance said about alcohol been involved in how many driver deaths on our roads last year?
Yeah, it's over a third. It's about 35% actually of, I'm not speaking for last year because the data isn't available for that, but in general, the coronial data would suggest that about a third of driver fatalities would test positive for alcohol. And, you know, the figures that we've just seen there for arrests and, you know, multiple arrests for that, unfortunately, that's actually only the tip of the iceberg. About 12% of people, 12% of drivers admit to drink driving in the past year. So you just, you know, think of
it. So on the basis that they think they're not going to be stopped, that they'll get away with it.
Essentially, you know, like actually, this is from RSA, Road Safety Authority surveys, and about 75% people would say, well, I'm not that likely to be caught. And they're actually completely correct. They are not that likely to be caught. You know, just going back to that figure that, you know, about 12% of people, if you put that in numbers, that's 424,000 people, about 1,100 every single day taking a car onto the road while under the influence of alcohol. And yet we have a handful of arrests. There are about 5,000 arrests a year.
And what is the likelihood of facing a patrol or being actually asked to give a sample?
It's not very likely. I mean, roughly we have... the number of breath tests that are carried out in a year is about 180,000. And I do agree that that sounds like a large number, but we have 3.5 million drivers in the country. If you compare that, you know, with other countries, we know that here in Ireland, unfortunately, we have one of the lowest levels of roadside breath testing across Europe. In Australia, for example, they have set a target that basically equates to every licensed driver should expect to be breath tested once a year. I'm driving 40 years. I've been tested once. And usually anybody I ever say that to agrees with me. You know, it is. It's maybe once or twice in their lifetime that they've ever been tested. So there's a real need for a concerted effort where we set targets and we put the resourcing behind that. We can't expect the Gardaí to carry out multiple or additional extra tests unless the resources are there to be able to do it. And until they do, no amount of education, no amount of really, really good advertisements that we see coming out will make any difference, because people's expectations are that they will not be caught.
Sheila, I remember when all the fuss about the reduction of the limit to 50 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres of blood for driving, and that, you know, you wouldn't even be able to have one and you might be over the limit. Is there anything to suggest that people, now that there's been a change in attitudes and that people think one or maybe even two is grand?
All I can go is, you know, it's what the survey results say, that people's expectation is that they won't be caught and that they are drink driving. Not everybody. You know, the majority of people do not drink drive, but a very significant minority, 12%, do drink drive, and indeed will repeat drink drive as well.
And Geraldine Herbert, what about the possibility of other drugs being added in there now as well?
Yeah, I think that's a big problem. And I think there's two issues with that. Is number one, they don't follow the kind of predictable pattern of drink driving. So it's harder to detect it because it's not something that happens in a pub. You know, you can't set up roadblocks. It happens sometimes at home in friends' house. It's an awful lot harder. I also think there is a lack of understanding about drugs and how long they stay in your system. So it's not the same sort of clear cut idea that people have if they drink alcohol and they think I can drive tomorrow morning because I've left 12 hours or 10 hours or whatever. So I think that muddies the water as well. So, I mean, it's becoming a huge issue.
Well, actually, go back to you, Sheila, as a listener here who says, rules for drink driving in this country are ridiculous. Should be able to have 2 to 3 drinks over the course of an evening. Speed is a far greater issue which contributes to accidents.
You know, again, just look at the facts. You know, a third of driver fatalities had alcohol in their system. And I think, you know, and we'll be presenting data tomorrow actually in relation to serious injuries. So it's not just, you know, fatality. So that's absolutely huge. When people have alcohol in their system, even at relatively low levels, unfortunately, judgment is the very thing that goes awry. You're less able to, you know, just react quickly to be able to see what's happening. And the international evidence in this is so clear that, you know, even one drink actually does seriously impair your capacity to drive.
Now, Geraldine Herbert, there's also been research produced by University College Dublin suggesting that social media habits may explain nearly a quarter of risky driving behaviour in young people. Can you explain what's involved here, please?
Yeah, so this is the idea that people see risky driving on social media and it's seen as being acceptable. And therefore, then they're much more likely to accept this sort of behaviour or to carry it out on roads. Now, I think the thing about this, Matt, is we know that young drivers are easily distracted and they're slower to spot dangers and they're much more likely to take risks and to act impulsively. And I suppose what they're seeing then on social media is just making this worse and feeding into this. So I don't think it's in any way surprising.
Okay, so what sort of risky behaviour? Are they taking videos of sort of pulling stunts on the road, is it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of Instagram and TikTok sites. I actually wrote a piece on this a few months ago and I spent a lot of hours trawling through them. And you'll see people doing all sorts of crazy behaviour. And if you look at the comments underneath, it's all, wow, that's amazing. That's really skillful. Very few people will ever point out on these things that this is actually very dangerous. So all of this kind of feeds into this idea that this is harmless, that this is, you know, as I said, skill displaying more than anything else. And there's a huge number of these sites and they get like a lot of a lot of followers for them.
But aren't they all easily identifiable? Okay, if they're things coming from outside of Ireland, nothing the Gardaí can do. But if an Irish driver does that, can they not be prosecuted for what they upload?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is this is dash cam video footage. Not in all cases are the driving the licenses plates actually identifiable. And if they're only uploading them to social media, I think that basically what these pages do is they don't take any responsibility for it. They just post them up and it's just people watch them or whatever. So I don't know how much detection is actually done on the basis of them.
Something else in relation to driving habits. What are the figures at present as well, Geraldine, about people driving without insurance?
Well, it's one in 15 cars on the road at the moment are not insured. They were the very latest figures. So, I mean, there has been a lot of work. That's gone from one in 12. There has been a lot of work done on that. And we now know that it's much easier for the guards to detect uninsured drivers. And there's been various different regulations have come in about, you know, the information you have to give insurance companies and the kind of information that the guards have, at their disposal. But, I mean, it's still an issue on the road. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, a lot of listeners going, drink driving laws are too harsh, says another one. Then quite a lot of people saying that they have never in lengthy times driving on the roads for many years have ever been stopped to be breathalyzed. Phil says there needs to be three strikes on your out policy in drink driving. If you get caught a third time, there should be a custodial sentence as well as hefty bans and fines. And Geraldine, there are people also bringing up other things in relation to driver behaviour, things like people using their mobile phones and also now getting distracted by the screens on the dashboards, it's not just a question of changing the radio station, but they're following maps or they're doing all sorts of things on it. It's distracting them from their driving.
Yeah, I mean, distracted driving is a huge issue across Europe, and it's a significant one when it comes to fatalities. The biggest problem with the screens are that, you know, there's most of them now, they've actually just removed buttons. So you actually have to wade your way through the screen to actually, you know, do something. And in some cases, it's just to reduce the volume on the radio or to change the air conditioning or something. So that means you're taking your eyes off the road. And that's a big problem. The other problem is, Matt, that a lot of those screens are set up to be used in European cars, which obviously the driver sits on the other side of the road. So they're actually using the screens with their right hand, whereas we use the screens with our left hand. And most people, their predominant hand is their right hand. So therefore, it's even more complex for Irish people to be using them because they're just not designed to be used that way. So all of that adds to the layers of complexity and distraction that the screens are posing.
OK. Sheila Gilheeny, just tell us a little bit of what you're doing tomorrow, what you're trying to achieve.
So we want to raise awareness of some of the issues here. We want to point particularly to the attention to the national and the international evidence on you know, the impact of alcohol, but more especially, what are the kind of things that really do work? So we have speakers from the Road Safety Authority, and we have our keynote speaker is Dave Cliff, who's from the Global Road Safety Partnership, and he will be particularly pointing to the evidence from Australia, who's really tackled this.
Sheila, we have one, and this is like going back to the future. What are people in some rural areas supposed to do? Most people don't have to go out and drink and drive home because they don't have any buses or taxis for them to get out, and if they walk, they could be run down or could be injured themselves. This is like the arguments when the reduction was introduced, what must be now about 20 years ago.
You know, I can appreciate that people do want better road services and transport services in rural areas. But, you know, relaxing drink driving conditions does not make life any better. I mean, the thought of actually getting a call to your door that your daughter, your son has been killed on a rural road, unfortunately, is more likely than on a city road.
Thank you very much, Sheila Gilheeny from Alcohol Action Ireland. Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor for the Irish and Sunday Independent newspapers.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.